Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
It's New York Primary Day 2006. Coming up in 15 minutes, all four candidates in the hotly contested 11th congressional district race in Brooklyn, Andrews, Clark, Yaski, and Owens, make one final bid for your votes. Coming up in an hour, it's our informal, unofficial, thoroughly unscientific Brian Lehrer Show exit poll for any of the races today. And coming up tonight, don't forget, I'll be anchoring our election returns coverage beginning at 9 o'clock on AM 820 WNYC and going as late as necessary. But we begin the morning with politics junkie, professor of public affairs at Baruch College, Dr. Doug Muzio. Hi, Doug. Happy
Good
primary
morning,
day.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
I'm okay. We have Spitzer Swasey, Cuomo Green, mm-hmm. Maloney, Clinton Tessini, Spencer McFarland, and various local races. And so little time. Here's one of my favorite stories of the morning. We were going to cover Clinton headquarters tonight, among others of the major candidates for our returns program, but the senator is apparently not even setting up a headquarters tonight. What do you make of that?
Oh, it's nice to be 90 points ahead and have your eyes on the horizon. It is a luxury not experienced by many.
Right. And, of course, anti-war candidate Jonathan Tessini never did get the national liberal blogosphere behind him.
No.
As so helped Ned Lamont in Connecticut. Why not?
Tessini wasn't Lamont and Clinton wasn't Joe Lieberman. I mean, Lamont had been an elected official, even though a local official, very wealthy, media savvy, and was able to communicate that message. Also, Joe Lieberman was committed to that vote and, in fact, called those who disagreed with the president disloyal. Clinton's position was far, far more nuanced, and she has been very critical of the White House, even though she's never, you know, abandoned her support for the original vote. So it's both that Tessini was underfinanced, not a very good campaigner, and that Clinton wasn't Lieberman.
Underfinanced is a big, big deal, and yet Senator Clinton sent out campaign literature over the weekend. A lot of mailings went out. She spent campaign money on that. I guess she thinks that to help her with the national race for president that presumably she's going to undertake, it helps her to win by, 90 points instead of 70 points.
Oh, absolutely. And she wants to beat the Republican winner, likely Spencer, by historic margin. She would love to beat Chuck Schumer's record in a Senate race that I guess he set in 2004. She wants to come out of this with tremendous momentum.
And Spencer, running for the Republican nomination to run against Senator Clinton, against K.T. McFarland, he's the more conservative on social issues, and he has the conservative party nomination,
yes.
So he'll be on the ballot in any case in
yes.
November. I guess that gives him a base that McFarland doesn't have for today.
Yes, I would expect that Spencer would win that primary. I mean, it's been a rather bizarre primary. I mean, it's almost like a ongoing psychodrama. It's the subject for, sociologists and psychologists.
With all their personal issues.
Oh, getting... absolutely. I mean, talking about mudslinging and negative campaigning, I mean, this is, even though quiet has been one of the nastiest and most personal.
Who is even likely to vote at all today, Doug? If the marquee races are all supposed to be blowouts, who besides political junkies, and you live in New Jersey, will actually turn out?
Well, I mean, you would expect a low turnout election, but there are going to be enough people turning out that it would have been worth holding the election. I mean, clearly, you know, you don't have these marquee state races to drive local statewide turnout, but you've got some local races, like the race that you're covering this morning, that should generate significantly higher turnout. But, I mean, the election's a snooze with a lot of Z's. I mean, nothing's going on.
You know what's one of the most interesting dynamics for me today is the way the Atlantic Yards proposal runs through a number of these races in Brooklyn like a fault line. Let me tick off some of these. Opposition to the Ratner development is the base of support, I think, at this point for Chris Owens in that race to succeed his father, Congressman Major Owens.
Yep.
It's a key issue for Charles Barron against his two opponents in the 10th Congressional District.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Bill Batson issue in his race against Hakeem Jeffries to succeed Assemblyman Roger Green. You think this is going to motivate a lot of turnout, mostly by opponents of the project?
Yeah, I would expect so. I don't know what the level is, and I don't know the ability of those folks to actually turn out the vote. But that's the kind of activated, angry vote that will come out. Who knows, but it could be significant. I mean, certainly, does it decide the winners in any of those races? I don't know, but it certainly could have an impact and the final position, if not the final result.
Doug Muzio, professor of public affairs at Baruch College, my guest on WNYC, my first guest on this primary day. In about 10 minutes, we will go to those candidates from the 11th Congressional District in Brooklyn, Andrews, Clark, Yaski, and Owens. So much has been made regarding that race about the racial dynamic, the fact that it's a historically majority black district created under the Voting Rights Act to empower a black voting majority. The electorate, I believe, is 60% black, roughly. And so David Yaski is the only white candidate and who, in fact, moved a few blocks so that he could enter this race, is getting accused by some, particularly Yvette Clark, among the black candidates, of being a carpetbagger. Is there something else going on in that race? And I mentioned Atlantic Yards. That's below the surface of the media.
You know what? I think it is essentially a demographic race. I mean, you know, it's voting constituencies, and these voting constituencies break down along demographic and socioeconomic lines, along race, income, and neighborhood. And it, as a political scientist, it's real interesting because some of the black leadership is arguing that a white can't represent the district, that demography is really destiny here, and that's real problematic. Whether Yaski is an opportunist, whether he's the most qualified, whether he's buying the election, is essentially a sideshow to the race issue. I mean, it's got to be a combination of race and competency, but race is there.
And I read in the Jewish Week this morning that Orthodox community leaders in that district are trying to turn out their members for Yaski because they consider him the strongest supporter of Israel. We haven't heard much about that particular ethnic vote, though we've heard a lot about the black vote and how they might go. So, of course, like any Brooklyn district, there
Come
are
on.
Many different constituencies.
Right, and you try to activate your base. And the Orthodox community is a disciplined political community. They vote in a certain direction in large blocks. So you've got all these, you know, I'm stressing race, but clearly there are other types of fault lines, some of which are issue fault lines, as you suggest in the Atlantic Yards project.
Right.
I don't want to overstate race, but you can't understate it.
Right. And Ben Smith on his Daily News, Daily Politics blog said, you know, with Major Owens traditionally popular in both the white, certainly in the white parts of that community, as well as with anyone else, and his son, Chris Owens, going hard after the anti-Atlantic Yards project, which is a more predominantly white opposition in Brownstone, Brooklyn, that maybe the hidden dynamic here is instead of three candidates splitting the black vote, you're going to have Yaski and Owens splitting the white vote.
Interesting. It seems, okay, let's talk about the electoral dynamic. Yaski looks like he could, just looking at the numbers, wins if the blacks' worst nightmare occurs and the black candidates split the vote. I think Yvette Clark wins if both Owens and Andrews bottom out. I think that's her hope, that that black vote isn't split and that there's a decompression in, you know, her two male opponents, and that will put her over the top. Who knows? It's what's on the ground, how you pull out your vote. Is 1199 and 32BJ pulling the vote for Yvette? Are the paid the Yasky folks pulling the vote? Does Andrews have AFL-CIO and party organization? It's who gets out the vote that's going to make the difference.
How about the neighboring 10th Congressional District, East New York, and some other neighborhoods around there? It's Ed Towns, the incumbent, being challenged by Congressman Charles Barron and Assemblyman Roger Green. These are both very popular politicians in the neighborhood, although they're very different. Green is a little bit more of a kind of play with the establishment guy, and Barron is more of a firebrand.
Right. And Towns himself, how effective is Ed Towns be? How has he represented that district? I mean, he's been accused of being a well-dressed empty suit, and then you've got Charles, the Black Panther, very smart, very engaging, but you know where he's, you know, to a certain extent, you know where he's coming from. How effective he'd be as a congressman, I don't know. And then Green's got all this personal baggage of his, you know, convictions. It's, you know,
well,
there's
was one,
a Lazarus-like quality to that story.
One conviction, I think, for or pleading guilty to bilking the state on a travel expense. But then he was reelected.
He resigned, he withdrew, and then he was reelected. Sometimes, you know, constituencies are baffling. And I don't know what happens in that district. It seems as if Towns has got the advantage because neither of the other two have really raised money or have put in a substantial operation on the ground.
And so, what is his base of support, Ed Towns? Do you know?
No, in fact. Neither geographically. I mean, that's just part of my ignorance is, you know, Brian, that much of it is you don't almost need a base of support. It's that you're the incumbent, and that's the name people know, and you've been around long enough, they recognize your name, and then they pull a lever. I mean, clearly he's got, you know, geographic and other types of support. I'm just ignorant about
that. Right. So I know some of Barron's support is from people who say, look, as, you know, a member of the New York delegation, you kind of know how any of these guys are going to vote, but Towns and Owens and some others like that become relatively invisible. At least they know Barron's going to open his mouth.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you want an articulate, outspoken, smart guy, vote for Barron. I mean, he's it. I mean, he is a very engaging guy, and he will not be quiet.
Though, again, according to Jewish Week, the Orthodox community in that district is organizing to support Towns and Barron as an outspoken critic of U.S. policy toward the Middle East would be the worst nightmare of the Orthodox community among
those
three.
Yeah, I believe. I mean, that's certainly the perception, and I would think that they'd be, in a sense, more motivated to vote against Charles than they would be motivated to vote for Yasky in the 11th.
Right, though they probably have much less of a presence in the 10th Congressional District.
Sure.
Last thing, and we've got about 30 seconds. Who's motivated to vote for Cuomo or Green if that race is really perceived, as we hear, as a contest between who is less disliked?
Well, I mean, you know, you can vote your dislikes. Again, that's the closest of the elections, but it seems to be a snooze there. And I think the real fireworks, I mean, a lot of elbows have been thrown here, is the Pirro Cuomo race, presuming Cuomo wins, or even a Green race. It's going to be nasty. That's going to be a fun one.
It's going to be a fun one. We will have the gubernatorial candidate from the Republican Party, Faso, on tomorrow morning to react to the presumed Eliot Spitzer win tonight. So, Doug Muzio, political affairs professor, public affairs professor at Baruch College. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure, Brian.
Those four candidates from the major Owen seat race in a minute. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.